Okay, so we all heard the sad news for Klal Yisrael. Chaim Kanievsky, Zichro Tzadik, was nifter Erev Shabbos, and today's Levaya, and it's only fitting that we say some words, hesped, at the loss of such a great gadol, such a tzaddik, and. And I would begin by saying that most of us don't realize, or really, I would say, maybe appreciate enough the impact that that gedolim have on our lives. We don't necessarily come in contact with them on a daily basis, and even at times we do. It's very rare, but we don't realize that they have a tremendous impact on our lives in many ways. First of all, they have an influence on the tzibor, on direction of the tzibor. But even halacha lamaisa, they have a tremendous impact. For example, you have always have major questions. Let's say you have a question on shechita, right? Or tefillin, the parshios. How do you make the parshios? What needs? How much needs lishma? How do you make lishma? How do you write? Let's say letters written this way, that way. When you buy a pair of tefillin, you have no idea what into it. Maybe there was a shaila that had to be presented to a gadol. Who would they go? They go to one of the gadolim. They go to the great gadolim of our society. We would say, oh, I'm not in the sugya. You know, like they used to have that story goes around. Guy's 50 years old, didn't buy a pair of tefillin yet. He said, I haven't finished the sugya yet. Right? So, but the gadolim can't wait. They have to know every single sugya. You have an area in this town. Now, I don't know when it was put up, but even if you extend it, probably there's going to be a shaila. What do we take in? Can we take in this part of the city? We're squaring off the city. So who do you go to? You go to gedolim. So gedolim affect society in many ways, halachic ways for sure, even though you may not realize it. Like I said, your mezuzah, how do you write letters? It was written like this. What's considered touching? What's not considered touching? What type of parshas are there? All these shailas are presented to gedolim because they are well-versed in every aspect of the Torah. It's a tremendous amount of knowledge that they have to absorb and be able to give over to Klal Yisrael. And that's why we look up to them. Mm-hmm. And actually, we even find a mitzvah, one of the mitzvahs with the Raisa, which the Sefer Chinuch clarifies and brings down in such a nice, orderly fashion. It's mitzvah. There's a mitzvah that a person should come close, attach himself to Talmid Chachamim. The Sefer Chinuch says we are commanded leschaber l'dabek, to come close and attach to imcha chachmi Torah with Chachamim. Why? Kedei shenilmod imohem. You should learn from them. You see their actions. You learn their mitzvos, how they conduct themselves, what's important to them, and we're, like the Rambam says in Hilchos Deos, we get influenced by society. Human beings get influenced by our society. That's a fact. The Rambam brings it down. Every sociologist will tell you that. And I always say probably one of the best examples is, which I always use, how society influence us, sometimes, unfortunately, in a negative way, like the Hanukkah presents. Right? There's no siman in Shulchan Aruch talks about Hanukkah presents, but in our society, a Hanukkah present, like it's so important, you have to get the presents, you must get the presents. It's a gracious thing. Nothing to do with Yadus, but we got influenced by our society, and that's why we do these things, unfortunately. So we want to put ourselves in a society that's Torah-oriented. And how do you put yourself in a society that's Torah-oriented? Do you want to take this off? I'm going to finish the ring. Just go. Yeah, how do you stay around Bagadolim. You see what they do. You see what their lives are. You see what's important to them. Mm-hmm. And this affects you. And then you say, oh, these are really the important things of our lives. And you began to draw into their pattern of life. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to agree with every psak, but you want to learn their culture. You want to see, this is the culture I should be attached to. This is what's important to you. I guarantee you, I will tell you, 100% sure, Chaim Kanievsky had no idea there was a big Super Bowl, was it a month ago? Everyone knows what you're talking about. But I would also guarantee you, to probably to the last day of his life, he was there davening Hanetz. I understand from what I picked up that he never missed the Hanetz Minyan from the time he was 12. I don't know how accurate that is, but it may have been 13, may have been 14. But to him, this was important, never to miss a Hanetz Minyan. Every single day he was there. So that, you know, you're in his neighborhood, you see, wow, this is what it means to him. So it has an influence on you. These are important things. These affect your life. The Super Bowl, what's it going to do with you? What's it going to do with you? You're not going to be a bowl player anyway. You're not going to make the major leagues, whatever they call them there. That's for sure. Forget. But Torah, this is your grasp. This is what you can grasp. This could be part of your life. You can come things that are chashuv to you. And if you can't, you know, sometimes, listen, not everyone's made fun of it. It's not a simple thing. You have to have a certain type of nature for it. But if not, but then you see the importance of minyan. You see the importance of minyan. So you don't make hanetz. You see what it means. If I'm asking, never miss hanetz, you see the importance of minyan. So these things have a tremendous impact on us, both on a general level, things that we may not even notice. Like I said, what type of shechita is good. All these shilas that come to him in Eruv, mezuzos, all these things are we don't even notice, but we're being influenced by the psak, and then certainly their personal culture, what their machshir, what is important to them, and I would just first like to say is that Reb Chaim Kanievsky's father was a very big gadol. He was known as the stipler. He himself was a gadol. By the way, he was born in Ukraine. I think Chaim Kanievsky was also born in Ukraine. So in that respect, they got out in time. But Stipel was a very big gadol. He married the Chazon Ish's sister. So that made the connection between him and the Chazon Ish. And so the Chazon Ish was really Chaim Kanievsky's uncle. And the Stipel himself was known as a tremendous gaon. And when I was here the first time I was in Eretz Yisrael in the 1960s, we went to see the stipler more than once. Now, he was very hard of hearing. I went, when I was in Bnei Brak, when I went to Bnei Brak for Shabbos, I would daven in the shul. And you see the stipler, he had to actually almost put his ear into the Bakore's mouth, otherwise he couldn't hear. Now, Shabbos had a question. He actually had to shout it to him, shout top of your lungs. During the week, he gave you a piece of paper and a pencil, and you write down the shaila, and he would answer you. And of course, for me, that also had a tremendous impact. You see, a person that has this disability, you know, not to hear. Okay, I mean, Rahman Latzlan, your whole life changes. Didn't stop him from learning for a second. Learning, writing Sfarim. His very famous sefer was the Kehilas Yaakov. Kehilas Yaakov was a sefer that took different sugyas and gemaras and was very analytical and was very in-depth in logic and svara. And it's interesting, I brought it here because one of the things that caught my eyes, I happen to have in the house, obviously, just to, as a side point, you see over here, it says right away in the sefer, it says printed in Palestine. So just a side point to know. We don't want to get involved in politics now. But I'm sure in another 10, 20 years, the Arabs are going to say, listen, we're so good to the Jews. You know, we let them print this farm by us, you know. So don't fall for that. There never was a Palestine Arab country, never. So get that straight right off the bat. Jews lived here, we've been here longer than the Arabs, always have been here. So don't get fooled with that. But let's go back to our point over here. So that was a very big gone. And Chaim Kanievsky was his son, and as we know, as I said, Chaim Kanievsky was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, as we all know. But not only do you see his love for Torah, but his love for Klal Yisrael. He had a tremendous love for Klal Yisrael that I just trying to think if it could be matched by anybody. First of all, you would write him a letter, he'd answer you in 3 days. I don't know how he did it. I'm talking about years ago. Today, I don't know the mail. Today, the mail takes a month to get a letter. But in the old days, you get a letter, 2-3 days was normal letter. You wrote him a letter, you had to write him a letter, your Shaila, and in the letter, you put a self-addressed stamped envelope. And 3 days, I remember I wrote him about 2 or 3 times, I was shocked. I got the answer. He write very short. He wouldn't write a big arichos. He wouldn't write a whole tshuva. He write mutter, asa. This is the minig. The Rambam means this, like in one line, and you get it back in 3 days, almost guaranteed. I don't know how a person could be so devoted to that and kept up with it for I don't know how many years he kept up with it. His house was literally always open. He married Rav Yosef's daughter, so she was raised in house of a gadol herself, and I don't think the door was ever locked. He'd come in while he was eating, he wanted to go in. His wife, Leah Sham, would, say he was eating, he'd wait a minute, he'd walk in. Almost never close the doors. Took people, Shiloh's advice and so on and so forth. And even going to B'nai Brak and davening in his minyan, which I from time to time would do. Actually, a few years ago, he took a few boys there to daven Hanets with him. And when I went years ago, the minyan was downstairs because they were able to walk steps. The first time I went in, daven Hanis, Chaim Vayeskin, so yeah, should be interesting to see. The first time I walked into the shul, I look up front, I don't see him. They say he never misses Hanis. I asked the person, where's Chaim Vayeskin? So, no, he doesn't sit up front. He sits like in the middle. Turned around, he said, here's an ungodl. Everyone knew it was an ungodl. He said, he's not the rav of the shul. It's not an official job, wasn't the rav of the shul. No need for him to sit up front. Sat with everybody else, had a little shtender, that was like an experience of what anivus means. It means to really live it and really feel, somehow I'm not the rav of the shul, I could be with everybody else. A person's a rav comes in as a guest right away. He knows where he wants to sit, right up front. Try to get him a seat right next to the rav of the shul. Chaim Vayeskin, a normal place, sat down like a normal place. Then after davening, I'm talking about I was there the first time about 30 years ago in the 1990s. Right away, there was a line of people, and he answered Shilas. Yeah, true. Our society, I've seen a change in our Torah society in many ways. One way is the dress. When I was growing up, most of the yeshiva world, the boys didn't have beards. If you look at the old pictures of Tiferes Yerushalayim by Rav Moshe, of the first group that got a smicha for Rav Moshe and the Mashkiach were the only two people who had a beard. All the other yeshiva guys, it wasn't the style then to grow beards. All clean shaven. By the way, Rav Moshe was the one, that gave a hat on the shaver. The shaver was a new device, and the question is, mut is asa? Some held was asa, some still held was asa. Rav Moshe was one of the gedolim that passes absolutely mutter, because it operates like a scissor. But as time went on, we used to wear color hats, color shirts. That was acceptable, but no, that move, everything came black. And now also the bracha, running for a bracha, that also came, wasn't so popular in my days. When I was your age, it wasn't so popular that got to run for a bracha. A person came across in a kali, got to run for a bracha, got to run for a bracha. That came later on. But anyway, I went the first time to daven by Chaim Konyevsky, Zechat HaLevracha, so right after davening, a whole line of people, some came for a bracha, so on and so forth, but people had shalat, they stood in line, he asked him shalat, he answered right on the spot, he answered it, and sometimes the person brought him a letter, he read the letter, but what was amazing, that to him, his time was valuable. His time is valuable. When he had free time, it wasn't that he was going to go fishing or something like that. He's going to learn more. Going to learn more and more. But he gave his time to any person that came for a Shiloh. He was there to answer the Shiloh. And also, his father, the stipler, had a minig. I'm not sure where it came from, but if you invited the stipler to be a sandik at a bris, the stat will go. You go, oh, covered. Oh my God, okay. And Chaim Kieski did it for, I don't know, how he went to a bris. One time I was a bris in Yerushalayim. And, you know, a friend of ours. Remember Hella? Remember Hella? Were you there then? No. I lived a few places away from Hella, and there, the family was, I think it was Hella. Tama Hella, I think it was, right? Yeah. Right, yeah, so I'll invite the bris, okay. I go to the bris. Chaim Kieski's there. I said, boy, I never knew he was related to Chaim Kieski, this guy. Yes, I said, how are you related to Chaim Kieski? No, I'm not. He said, I'm not. Why not? He said, Holly Knows, how'd you get him here? He said, someone told me, if he has Chaim Kieski come to be Sunday, he'll come. And he came from B'nai Brak. So he said, that was the meaning of his father. The person invites him to be Sunday. He went from B'nai Brak to Hanof. Because the person invited him, he never knew the guy, never saw him in his life. But a person wants him to come there, it makes the person feel good. He's there, you know, it's a big choshev thing. You have Chaim Kieski, Sandik, at the bris, you know, it's a big choshev thing. By the way, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was a Sandik at Shmuel Dov's bris. It was a big covet. So he went, because he felt, besides being Gadol Chachma, he felt that Adam Chavero. He felt a person thinks it's important, okay, I'll go. He go, he went, and so on and so forth, and that was it. When he got older, it was hard for him to travel, so he couldn't travel, so his policy was, if you wanted to be selling, you had to make the bris in his base medrash, or in the base medrash next to him. At the end, since that came to policy, it used to be that we had a boy, if one of the Chaim Kieski come, as soon as the baby was born, right away you call up. If the baby was born for Shkia, forget it. It's impossible to be in Haifa and Hanof at the same time. It's an impossibility. If the baby was born right after Shkia, you knew the day, right away you call up, the people knew the number, Chaim Kieski, he's coming. But when he got older, he couldn't travel, so they made something, had like 5-6 brisim. He'd go right in the base mesh. He'd go, oh, okay, we'll bring the baby to him. And they went from 1, 2, 3, and then he went to his base mesh to learn. So so he was one, besides his in-depth understanding of Torah, he had a true understanding of Beram Chavero, and more than understanding, he practiced it. He himself practiced it. His house was always open. He went to Bisandik, if you invite him. Answered questions. I don't know if anyone ever counted. I don't know. I can't even estimate. Hundreds of thousands over the years. Gave people advice, and of course, as time went on, and the culture came for brachas, and we gave brachas too. We gave brachas also. There's no issue giving a bracha, but other than the fact that you know, it took up time from Gadol, but they did it. They did it. They did it. It came more and more popular. And absolutely, there was that came also part of his task. As we see from the Sefer Chinuch, we should be close. It's a mitzvah to be close to Gadolim. You learn from their ways, and you learn from how they act, learn from their Beram Chavero, and learn from the Torah. And he was known growing up as one that his Bekiyas, his knowledge of Torah, which Gemaras, Rishonim, Achronim, was massive, massive. And the story goes, again, I didn't hear it firsthand, but that the Stipler's father was more centered on analyzing a sugya very, very much in depth. They said once his father said to him that okay, he went through Shas a few times. Okay, now maybe she get more involved in a little more. So they said, no, I have to now go through every single Kesef, every single Gemara, what the Kesef Mishnah wrote on. Then I'll be sad. One more time, I got every single Gemara that the Kesef Mishnah brings down. I want to chazer all those Gemaras. So it was his memory, his mind was more in depth than a computer. And because of that, his later years is able to write as unbelievable a sefer. he put together on Zerayim, he finished it, he put together Zerayim, like a Mishnah Berurah. Now all these sugyas, Zerayim, Shemitah, right, they weren't on the table. Very little is written on it. Right, Mishnah Berurah Nor Chaim, we do every day. You have Diyodeh, you have Chosha Mishpat, you have Ibn Ezra, but who wrote on Shemitah? Who wrote on Trumos? And Maestros, Achali Avalamuan. But who wrote? It wasn't practice. All these things weren't practice. So he wrote like a Mishnah Berurah. He wrote, the Rambam is like the Mahaba, and then he wrote his Perish, exactly, it looks exactly, you can see it here, it looks exactly like a Mishnah Berurah. His Perish is like the Mishnah Berurah. And then he wrote a Be'er Halacha, then he wrote Tzion Halacha, and if you open it up from far away, it looks just like a Mishnah Berurah. And you think it's the Mishnah Berurah. And there he brings down, like the Mishnah Berurah, all the Rishonim and all the Achronim. He has the Rambam as the Mahaba, then he has the Sif Katan this, and he'll bring down who argues with the Rambam, what he's able to gather from this. And of course, the Chazon Ish was like Ashrei to him. That was, he knew every Chazon Ish, like a person would say Ashrei Shachar is cold. And I said, no, the Chazon Ish holds this, and this disagrees with this one, holds like that, Pesach, and it came, especially during the Shemitah year. Everyone refers to it as what do we do halacha? Many, many shalos that come up, and he published it, and it was called Derech Amunah. That was called Derech Amunah, and it's four volumes, and that came now the standard Mishnah Berurah for halachas that are now coming back in Eretz Yisrael, such as Shemitah, Trumos, Maestros, all that came back, and the last. Sefer, he started writing on the Rambam. That came his style. And he started writing on Hilchos Beis HaBechira. Yeah, on Hilchos Beis HaBechira. And again, the same. But he called that one Derech Chachma. And Avoda, not just Beis HaBechira, but he did two of them. He did Hilchos Beis HaBechira and Hilchos Kli HaMikdash. And again, beautiful. It's written, you read the Rambam. So what did he do? You read around, what do you know? The other Rishonim agree? All right, the Ravid's on the side. But the Miri's not on the side. Rashi's not on the side. Baal Tos is not on the side. So you read him, look down there. Do they argue? Do they agree? They don't agree? They comment? Don't. You read the Derech Chachma and the Be'er Halacha. It's like you went through the whole sugya. You have it all in front of you. Tremendous work. And he was able to encompass that, like the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim, they all had that breath of knowledge. And put it all together. I'll be honest with you. The Chofetz Chaim on the Shulchan Aruch had a little bit easier because he already was following. He had the Magen Avraham to look up to. He had the Gra. He already people the Behetiv. A lot of things were written at the time that Chofetz Chaim wrote his Sefer. The Chaim Kiss had nothing. There's absolutely nothing. There's no Magen Avraham, no Shach, no Taz, nothing. He's putting it all together. Actually, I feel if you really want to. Maybe appreciate a little more the Chofetz Chaim. You read Shmiras Halashen. That is new territory. And I feel you see the Gaonis in the Chofetz Chaim more in Shmiras Halashen, because, like I said, I had no one to look up to. He was, other than the Rishonim, he was gathering here from Gemara's, Rashi's, and that's what Chaim Gersky did over here in Zerayim, and he did it here in Avoda. Like I said, Nebuch only wrote on Beis HaBechira and Kli HaMikdash, but he's able to gather it and put it in such a beautiful, fine way that's presented so clearly and makes things come to light. And and personally, I would say, as you guys know, I'm very much involved in the Harabayit. Certainly, I use a Sefer. And we all know of the storm today, if it's not the right word. How can you go up to Harabayit? Is it mutter? Is it asa? Is it mutter? Can you go? Not to go? And I always bring out in the shim that we have, it's a mitzvah deraisa. It's a mitzvah deraisa. And I did hear that Chaim Kineski, I never saw him writing. I did hear that Chaim Kineski was against going up to Harabayit. I don't know how true it was, but I heard it. So I said, you know what? We do that. That's what he says in the Sefer. Right? Very anxious to see what he says in the Sefer. So, of course, I looked up where. On the Rambam, I look up in the Rambam, where the Rambam says where you can go, where you can't go. And then the Rambam says, Mukudash Mimeno, the Harabayas, right? And who cannot go on the Harabayas? Zavim, Zavos, Nidos, Ulodos. They cannot go there. Right? These people cannot go to Harabayas. But Tom and Mace, which is us, you could go to Harabayas. As the Ram says, I'll check the Sefer. Let me see if he springs down. There's an Issa today. Nothing. No Issa today. Absolutely not. Doesn't say a word. No, the Harabayas, he brings down. Machna Via, clearly, this and that. And he does bring down, Vagoyim brings down Goyim. Yeah, Goyim. Alpha Pish, even though a Goy has a dinner of a Zav, Mitarabonin, they can go in the Harabayas. Up to the Chayel. Yeah, but very clear. Now you notice that when it came to Korban Pesach, I talked about Korbanos. So there, Reb Chaim Kanievsky brings down the problems of Korban Pesach today. If Bezer Shem Pizecha to find them is Mizbeach, yes, there could be major problems. Not a simple thing. And he tells right away, even though Tumah is Mutter, but what about the Kohen Gadol? What about Big Day Kahuna? What about the Tzitz? Now he doesn't answer. He said, listen, these are open questions which haven't been resolved. But Rabbi told you the problem with Korban Pesach, with Korbanos. He said right away, the Tzitz, Big Day Kahuna. Now, again, these are topics which are constantly being discussed and those who are actively involved in our buyers. Let's go to the Vatican. I would say, let's go to the Vatican. I'm trying to get a Chevron Knesset involved in sending a letter to the Vatican. Hey, give us back our Sfarim. Give us back our Kalim. We want to see what's doing there. You guys stole it, can we get it? So these are major topics taken today. He didn't get involved in it, but he did bring it out. Very clear. He brought it out that if you're going to start Korbanos, because the Ram says you can bring Korbanos to Gemara. You're allowed to bring Korbanos even though the Beis Hamikdash is not here. People have another fallacy. Say, I can't bring out the first bill of Beis Hamikdash. Absolutely fake news. Absolutely false. All you need is a Mizbeach. Dov HaMelech brought a carbon before the Beis Hamikdash was built. All you need is a Mizbeach. Yeah, but then it spins off other questions. Then you have, it's a whole topic. I mean, go mention this, the Chassam Sofer, the Chazon Ish. But he just tells you these points you got to clear. If you're thinking of bringing a carbon, including Korban Pesach, you're going to have to solve these problems, and he's not getting into that at this point. He probably had a mind to do it when he gets to those parts of the Rambam later on. But going to our bias does not say a word. Does not say a word why one should not go. Does not say it's an Issa. It's Asa. He just explains the Rambam, clarifies the din of a guy as clear as could be. So the Issa came like a known thing. It's Asa to go up. It's a phantom Issa. It doesn't exist. If it would have existed, he would have brought it down. He absolutely would have brought it down. So I did make an attempt. I figured, listen, I'm going to go ask him. He was always open. I know they're always open. So I said, I'll go ask him. So now that he's older, I wanted to go ask him about, it was about 3 years ago I started my effort to ask him, maybe 4 years ago. And now that he's obviously older, was weaker then, and I noticed that because he started slowing down his writings, because I know he wasn't up to what he used to be. So the one who was in charge of allowing people to go in was one of his grandsons. I wrote to him. No response. Then I happened to have my nephew who knows him, because he's able to finance some of the projects what Chaim Kanievsky was involved in. So no, I'll get you in. Write him again now. I'll get you in. Write him again. He asked me to, this time answering back. Yeah, the grandson. He said, what in particular is your question? Well, very clear. Right here he says, nothing about the Issa. So is it Issa to go to higher bias? Does he hold what he wrote, or is this new Issa that for some reason we can't go? That was it. Never got permission to go in. Never was able to make it over. Very disappointing. And not in Chaim Kanievsky, Chas v'Shalom. But when Gedolim get older, those who get in charge of them and handle their daily activities sometimes step beyond their responsibility. No one's asking them to decide which questions should be asked. That's not their job. Their job is to find a good time when we could ask him. But he didn't let me go in. And now, and truth is, I was thinking, trying to start over again, how to get to him. Unfortunately, that opportunity was lost. And unfortunately, Klal Yisrael will never know. It was a loss for Klal Yisrael. What was Rav Chaim Kanievsky's opinion today about going up to Har HaBayit? In the Sefer, Mutter. Doesn't say Mutter. Doesn't say a word about Nissa. Now, the scuttlebutt is that he held not to go up. Well, then, why? What? I'd like to know what the answer is. And why didn't it make it into the Sefer? So I can only tell you my feeling. The feeling is that's 100% Mutter to go up. There's no answer. Why it came out, and that's true. It is true. The stipler was against, remember, the stipler was here after the Six-Day War. And then the Rabbanim did come out that you shouldn't go up, but there was a different story then. Because then no one knew where anything was. No one knew where everyone was lost. We would go take the Harbayit, we'd show you what they call Herod's Wall, was covered with sand. No one knew where the valleys were. No. So, man, don't think, no one knew where you were walking. First of all, we hadn't had access to it for 18 years. And before that was under the Muslims, also with limited access. So now you can start sending people out there by thousands. No one was even sure where the Kodesh Kedoshim was. So many of the Gedolim did come out with an Issa at that time. The idea was to find out more information. But today we know within 10 feet of accuracy, 10 feet of accuracy, everything is. So does Rav Chaim Kanievsky, did he hold, you could go up, which seems to be from a Sefer? Well, for some reason, he was carrying on a previous decision, which didn't make it to a Sefer, and we'll never know. So unfortunately, we're never going to know what his opinion was. And I personally feel, well, so we have to go buy a Sefer. That's what he wrote. So there cannot be an Issa. So again, this just only demonstrates the influence that a Gadol has on Klal Yisrael. There's no question in my mind. If he would say, absolutely should go up, you would have 100,000 people going up a week. Who knows what numbers you'd have. We'd be in a different society today. But that information, we won't be able to get, and we'll have to move on without that. So Gedolim are those that direct us, affect our lives, give us the values of our lives, and that's why we show them respect. That's why it's a mitzvah to Gadol Dor's Nifter. Says that they close down the Batei Midrashos and people go to Levaya. They're expecting a million people there today. It's covered a mace, and it's covered a Torah. And the Gemara says when a Talmud Chacham dies, he's irreplaceable. It's interesting to know that Talmud Chacham takes over when that's Niftar. Why should that be so? Now sometimes, the status of that Gadol, you understand. Like when Moshe Rabbeinu died, no one can replace Moshe Rabbeinu. But throughout the year, you have Tanayim. Why? Each one that dies is irreplaceable. Why? Because besides the Psak Halacha, their nature, how they act, when you get to know them, you see what's important to them. And each one personifies a different part of Torah. And that overall picture is irreplaceable. That cannot be replaced. So I would certainly say that Los of Chaim Kanievsky, Zechat HaLevracha, certainly in our generation, is irreplaceable. His knowledge, in-depth understanding of Torah, and every aspect of it, that you have any question, any topic, applies without someone available to him. His love for Torah, his midos, what you can learn from him just by davening with him, just by seeing how he davens, his minhagim, what he davens, how valuable Baram Chavero is, these, you learn Anivis. The Gemara says Moshe Anaf Mikol Adam. That's the great praise we give to Moshe Rabbeinu, and you see it live. All that is a tremendous loss for Klal Yisrael that cannot be replaced. And our task is to continue and to try to do the best we can with the generations that are coming and our generation. And we should all be zocha to share. We have another month to Korban Pesach, to share in Korban Pesach. I'm here with you, Amen. Okay.